Thank you for joining us today, Representative Heather Scott. It's very nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me on today.
And Heather, to get started, we're going to give you open mic here for 2 or 3 minutes, if you would, and just introduce yourself to the voters and to the listeners, and answer one question in this period, that is, why are you running?
Okay. Well, thank you. It's good to be on today. And hello, all you listeners. I'm Representative Heather Scott. I just got back from Boise probably about 3 weeks ago. I've been in Boise for 3 months representing your interests down in Boise, standing for limited government, government transparency, and individual rights, and fighting for your freedoms down there. And so a little bit about me, I live over in Blanchard, Idaho, have a small farm over there, big garden, some chickens, black lab, and I have a husband, and I used to have a little roadside produce stand over there. And I've worked, before I did this job as your state legislator, I worked as a biologist doing fisheries and water studies all across the country. And I've been doing this for 4 years. I have a BS in biology, and as most of you know, I'm pretty vocal down in Boise. I really like standing up for North Idaho and having a seat at the table. You know, when I first went down there about 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, I was really shocked because a lot of our ideas weren't being heard. Committee chairmen were sitting on bill ideas. They were pretty much suppressing what I say the voice of North Idaho. And for the first 3 years I was down there, I pushed and pushed. And as you have probably heard through the district, the attacks that came on for me doing that. But as of this year, the fourth year I was in, finally, our bill ideas are being heard. And it's not just far right or far left. It's any idea that doesn't fit with the establishment. Those were the bills that were not being heard. So this year, we had an agenda of about 30 liberty bills for people's freedoms to kind of push back on government overreach. And of that, about 20 of them actually got heard in committee. Many of them made it through the House floor. Some of them passed into to law, made it through the House, made it through the Senate, and was signed into law. So it was pretty exciting. Why am I rerunning? I am rerunning because I feel like we're just getting going. We have fought so hard to fix this system and push back on the establishment, and I call it the Boise establishment, in the House side. Like I said, many of our bills got stopped on the Senate side this time. So I have some more ideas. I want to introduce some things that didn't make it all the way through the House and Senate, and I still have some more ideas I'd like to push. So that's why I'm running. And I guess that's all.
Okay. Well, let's dig in on your last statement there. You have some ideas you'd like to pursue. Can you describe the top 3 to 5 issues that you would like to tackle in the upcoming couple of legislative sessions that you'd be elected for?
Sure. So a big one that almost got passed last year but was vetoed by the governor was the grocery tax repeal. This seems to be a no-brainer, and it passed through the House and Senate with so much support for it. And this year, we decided to not rerun it because we knew the governor was going to veto it again. And after a veto, sometimes people are kind of leery to vote against the governor because then their bills might get vetoed. So they did not run the bill. All 3 governor candidates for next year have been in support of the grocery tax repeal. So I think that's going to be one of the first things we see. Another issue that, you know, everything's kind of slow moving in government, which I guess people know that for the most part. An issue that I have been slowly pushing back on is school levies, because our state constitution says that the state needs to be funding our schools. And when you look at the money that our state is getting for schools, they're not funding our buildings and maintenance, and they're putting that on the backs of taxpayers that are already paying taxes for schools. So I've been working with some a gal that does the education budget and trying to find different ways that we can push back to try to get rid of the levies completely. I mean, it's not like you can just pass a law and stop the levies. You have to set the structure in place, and we've been working on that, and that's another thing that I'm really interested in. Another thing is Idaho managing our own lands. We need our land to be managed, and with the fires in the southern area, on the southwestern edges of the state, we do not need catastrophic fires up north, and hoping to pass more legislation to allow Idaho to manage those federally controlled lands at the moment. So that's a few. I have a whole bunch more. I think this year I had like 25 of my own bills that I introduced in some sort. I do have a couple term limit bills that I will run again next year, some transparency bills, but lots of ideas. I like to ask for citizen ideas for bills, and I like to run ideas from just the average person that has an idea. And actually, one of the bills this year that passed was from a citizen from Sandpoint, or actually he's Bonner County. I don't think he's right in Sandpoint, but it got passed into law this year. So it's kind of exciting. I kind of like to see what the citizens want and then help them navigate through the system to get their ideas passed.
Which bill was that?
That was, I think it's 565 or 656, and it allows law enforcement officers to carry concealed in schools, in K through 12 schools, and then also colleges at all areas on the colleges. So it's something that retired law enforcement officers, they get, they have a 218 card, it's called. They go through extra training every year to qualify shooting, and then they get background checked yearly. So these guys are highly qualified. They've gone through extensive training, and it seems like we need help in our schools. So this is just one more layer of protection at a football game or basketball game or something like that. That they will, you know, be allowed to carry concealed.
And so this was a bill from a citizen in this area.
Yeah.
So how did they go from an idea to a bill being passed?
So briefly, it's so much easier than you think. Literally, if you just say, here's my idea, and you give that to your legislator, they go to legislative services offices and they say, here's my idea, and I'd like to turn it into law. And so they write it up for you in the legal language. They look through all the code. They've got programs that go through all the code to find, you know, if it affects other areas of code you're not even thinking about. And then they write up the language and give it back to you. And then you look at it and see, is this doing exactly what I want it to do? Actually, both of my bills that made it through the House floor this year, both of them were citizen bills. One was a citizen from District 34 who couldn't get someone there to carry it. So anyway, I kind of like that because it's government by the people, of the people, for the people. So that's kind of how I see it.
Okay, well, let's follow up on one of the things you just mentioned, and that's education funding. The state's budget for education was cut back drastically after 2009. As the recession took place. And since then, and the economy is improved, the legislature and the governor have been increasing school funding. Our question is, you know, do you favor or oppose increased funding for education? And if you support increased funding, how would the state pay for it? But I'd like to follow up on a thought that you brought, and that was you'd like to eliminate school levies altogether. But how would that money get replaced since the schools, I think our local district relies on school levies now for almost a third of their budget?
I know, it's really discouraging because they're getting double hit. So I'm looking at just some of the numbers for this year, and it says that for the fourth year in a row, we've increased the general fund appropriation for K-12 schools for more than $100 million. So the schools are getting, I think it's about 64% of the state's entire budget. The schools are getting the money. It's how they're using the money that's the problem. There's so much waste in the schools that never gets looked at. There's programs that have been started and money that's put to these programs, and then the programs kind of stop and the money just kind of gets consumed into the system. 64% of the money that's going into the schools, and we are, some of that money, we're appropriating money to do studies to decide if we need to do a study. It's ridiculous, and there's really no oversight. Once the money is appropriated to the schools for some program or study or counselors or something, there's no oversight on that. And so as painful as it is, I believe what we need to start doing with our schools is looking into how that money is being spent. Obviously, the students aren't getting it in the classroom. The teachers seem to not be getting it. So where else is that money going? I think the money's there. It's just we have to find the wasteful spots in it, just like our own budgets. If you only have, 64% of the money, there's got to be some wiggle room in there. There's got to be some places that you maybe are wasting money that you could put it in the right places. So that's where I would get the money for building and maintenance is in that 64%. And I don't think that's going to do that. I don't think you're going to decrease school or teachers. You don't want to decrease their salaries. You will just want to look at the waste in the system.
Well, the numbers that I've seen, and I'd have to dig up the source on this, but is that Idaho ranks very near the bottom in the whole country for per capita expenditure on education. So we're already near the bottom. It sounds like you're saying that you feel like there's stuff that could be cut out in order to make it more efficient still.
I don't know what numbers you're looking at, but 64% of the entire budget of the state is going to schools. So I don't know exactly if you're looking per child. When you get a number for the school, you have to make sure you're getting the state money that's going into it, every bit of it, the big bucket. Because I've even sat down and gone through some of the school budgets and I think I've got a big picture, and then all of a sudden there's some funding coming in. I said, well, I thought the total was at the top. No, this is, Title IX money, or this is this money. There's all these sources of money. So I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I do believe we can do a better job at looking into how we're spending the money in our schools to recoup the money to stop doing these levies on our citizens. I mean, yeah.
Just a little follow-up on that thought. Why not have the levies? I mean, you said to the burden on the citizens, but a little bit more on that thought. Because if a school district, say, as we have here in Bonner County, relies on the levy for a third of their budget at this point in time, a budget that you say could look a little different, what is wrong with having a levy? I think having it every 2 years is a big burden on the taxing district and things like that. And it's just a lot of work. But, it is a source of income for the schools that really are struggling.
And I understand the schools are struggling, but so are the citizens that are being taxed to death. And what we don't see is the citizens that have to move out of the area because they can't afford to live in the area. You probably know as well as I do, we struggle to keep business up here in North Idaho. I just think people are taxed enough, and the state is flush with cash. I mean, they went into this we went into the session with a $400 million surplus, and it was amazing how every single agency all of a sudden needed, we need to upgrade this year, and we need to do this year, and that money just start getting piddled away. And so the state constitution is clear. The state should be funding education. If we can't do that as a state, then there's something wrong. And so that's where I am with that.
Well, in that same thinking, if the levies didn't exist and there's this big surplus that the year started with, could the state increase that 64% funding for schools to 70% and make up the difference or some of the difference?
See, that's kind of was the thinking of what I was looking at with the levy. So this year I ran a bill against aggressive taxing districts. I didn't single out any particular district because there's several different taxing districts, but some of these areas, when a levy is turned down, they will rerun it up to four times a year and over and over and over again. So the bill I ran, it was a citizen bill, basically said if a levy fails, you have to wait 1 year. You have to respect the voters for at least 1 year. You know, the voter said no, don't come back in 3 months and ask for money again. And so the beauty of that bill is if these schools really need that money, okay, that levy money, they can go and their levy fails. They have legal standing to go to the state and say, hey, the Constitution says you will fund our schools, right? That's what the Constitution says. You're not funding our schools. That is what I was trying to set up, the opportunity for a school district or a taxing, well, it would just be for the school districts, because there's a legal obligation by our Constitution. And that's what I was getting at. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. But it sounds like there'd be a risk there that the school district might, in the ensuing legal fight that it would probably be, that school district might have to do a year or two without that funding. Well, at least a year by your bill, right? They'd have to wait a year before trying to rerun a levy, even if the voters were turning it down because they thought it was just a little too high.
Not if it was precedent. I mean, if the schools are asking for something they need, and that's the whole thing. To get to where the state will fully fund the schools, you have to have the opportunity for the school to need money, and the state to have to step in to give them the money they need. They've got the money in the state. The Boise schools are really nice. It's way different down there.
Yes, it is.
It's way different.
And there's a lot of disparity, and that's why I think a lot of state officials are looking at that issue, that the Boise schools have a lot more money to spend because they have bigger taxing districts than we have up here in the north, where we have a smaller population. I did look up while you were talking from the U.S. Census Bureau that Idaho, this is as of 2013, so it's a little different now, but Idaho, its per pupil expenditure by the state was $6,791 in 2013. It was next to last. Utah was last with $6,500 per student. And it's interesting. There's a huge disparity. New York's spending per student is $19,818. It's like three times as much as we have to work with in Idaho. I'm not offering any kind of idea about how you deal with that, because we're a much poorer state, I'm sure.
Well, and I think it's about 8,000 now. I think those are old numbers.
They are some from
2013. That's what they're saying, that they're spending per student. But we're not, there's no correlation between what's spent per student and outcome of student. Our students are ranked, I just saw the numbers, I don't have them in front of me, I apologize, but they're about mid in the country for education.
We're getting good results for what we're spending.
Good results for what we're spending.
And I got to say, our school district's been getting good results in the state as well with student achievement. So,
right.
So you're right. It's not a direct correlation. And we should probably move on to a different topic.
Can I just follow up real quick? You know, I was talking about Boise schools compared to our schools. There was a bill that came through this year that we were giving $100,000 for an interim committee, and it literally was just for two counties. So here's a state going to give money to study something, and it's for Ada County and Canyon County. And so, you know, of course, my question is, what about Kootenai or Bonner? We're growing. You know, Kootenai is the third largest county in our state. Those are kind of things that you definitely need people to speak up down there, because you will get run over. Okay.
Well, thank you. Very in-depth subject, and it can go on. But let's move on to another important issue for the everyday ordinary citizen up here in North Idaho, the economy and job creation. Do you consider this an important issue for a legislator to deal with? And if so, what specific actions would you advocate or support to improve the economy and job and jobs? And there's also kind of a follow-up question. Many states are increasing the minimum wage, some to as much as $15 per hour. Idaho's minimum wage is the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour. Should Idaho increase its minimum wage? So really, it's the economy, job creation, and then there's that secondary thought about increasing the minimum wage.
Okay, so I'll start with increasing minimum wage. Increasing someone's wage will not bring jobs to our area. We all want to make more money, but I truly believe the best way to increase jobs is to get out of business's way. We can see, the taxes are a huge deal. I get calls from businesses in downtown Sandpoint concerned about this extra 1% they have to collect on sales, and it's just one more chunk out of their paycheck that they have to pay. So reducing taxes is, I think, the best way to create jobs. Right now in our state, unfortunately, what we have is we have so many tax exemptions and carve-outs for different groups, different types of jobs. We actually have some law that encourages a company to come to our state, and when they come, they can be competing with another company. They don't have to pay taxes, so let's just say it's a hotel, and you bring another hotel in, this new hotel, because they're bringing 50 jobs, and I might not have the exact amount of jobs, they don't have to pay taxes. So when you carve out all these unfair exemptions, crony capitalism, giving little special perks to this group over this group, not making these people pay a sales tax, but the other people do, that's what causes grief in our state. And there's a ton of crony capitalism that's been going on. I talk about it all the time, the good old boys in Boise. I've even talked to some of the big corporate companies that they say, everybody has a lobbyist down there, and some of the big time people, and I'm not going to mention who they are. They said, we don't talk to you a lot because I know you think of us as a big corporation. And they said, but we deal with that good old boy thing too. And if we're not part of their network, we're not getting the exemptions. We're not getting our businesses in. So I think the best way to create jobs is to do an equal playing field where everybody's taxed the same and taxes are reduced. And you can do that when you get rid of all these special exemptions. So that's kind of... And up here, up north, we need technology. I know some people in the district that are still on dial-up. And so we're getting there. We just don't have the population to make it economically feasible. But as you see the growth coming from Coeur d'Alene and up 95, it's coming. And so that's kind of where I am.
Okay. Another topic, healthcare. So the state healthcare exchanges are in place now, and Idahoans signed up actually as one of the highest per capita rates in the country. But one provision in the law permits states to expand Medicaid to cover an estimated 60,000 to 80,000 Idahoans who fall in what they call the Medicaid gap. They make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to be eligible for subsidies on the state insurance exchange. Lawmakers the last 2 or 3 sessions at least have been talking about how to deal with this. They didn't come up with a solution yet. What action, if any, do you favor to cover these lower income Idahoans that are falling in that gap?
So we didn't deal with it again this year. And the reason that you guys don't see being up here and not being in it every day is... we have lots of ideas when it comes to healthcare. The ideas never get out of committee. It's completely, in my opinion, run by the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies down there. And you've got a chairman of one, the healthcare in the Senate, who's been in there for, I think, going on 16, 18 years, and the other guy about the same. And so these guys have tight strangleholds on the ideas and the ways to fix problems. The one option we had this year was literally a bailout to the insurance agencies. It was $100 million. It was taking the insurance, the big insurance agencies, taking all the people on their roles that were really sick and forcing them to go on Medicaid and then putting it to the state to pay for it. That's, to me, that's not a solution. I mean, it's just not a solution. And so they never let us have the conversations when it comes to healthcare. As you know, it's a big monster. It's completely controlled by these insurance agencies and the pharmaceutical companies, and it's hard to tap into. There has been ideas. There's been ideas to a lot of different ideas. They just can't get anywhere. So a way, I know this sounds like, I mean, we all want quick fixes. Here's a little longer-term fix. We have good citizen legislators running against both of those chairmen this year. Okay, so that means if those two guys get booted, they have to start from scratch. They have to the insurance companies have to start wooing another chairman. And so I truly think that that will free, if I don't know that we'd get both of them. I'd be happy to just get one of them out this year. But really, you can't get past some of these committee chairmen, and those are two that have strangleholds on the committees. So there is a gap population. There are people that need help, and the ways to help them, I do not believe, is taking more federal money to do that. The states that have done this Medicaid expansion, they're in trouble now. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but what happens is the feds come in and say, hey, we'll take care of all these people. And then after 2 years, they pull back the money and the state's responsible. So that's not a solution you're going to see from a Republican House, Senate, and governor, no matter how corrupt some of them are. I know it's sorry to say that, but it's... Go ahead.
So how do you feel about the citizens' initiative to put that question on the ballot for the state to take the federal money for the Medicaid expansion?
I love it that people are getting signatures to put something on the ballot. I think it's great. I think that's part of our government. I think that's the way to do it. If people feel like their legislators aren't listening, That is a great way to say, hey, we're doing this on our own. And so here's the fear I have. I've heard that several years ago, there was a citizens initiative for term limits. And the citizens put it on the ballot and they voted for it. And they said, we want term limits. And what happened? So once it got turned into law, the legislators just voted against it and took it out of the law. So there's that fear, but when that happens, I guess you'll know who's not listening to the citizens and who is, and you'll be able to narrow it down more. So, it's frustrating. It's so slow.
And that has happened where initiatives have passed, and then the legislature, somehow they figure out a way not to implement the...
It's a horror.
Go ahead. I have to follow that question.
Yeah.
So what if this one passed in the... Citizens of Idaho said, "Yeah, we want Medicaid expansion." Would you then, as a legislator, go ahead?
I don't know exactly what the ballot initiative does. It say we want to expand Medicaid and take federal money. How specific is it, or does it say we want to deal with the gap population, or do we want? Do you have it in front of you?
No, but I'm pretty sure it says to take the federal money and expand Medicaid to cover that population.
And of course, the goal is to get those folks that can't afford health care.
And maybe the legislature would come up with something different, but still honor that citizens' vote.
If that comes up and Idaho refuses to even deal with it or allow these other ideas to deal with the gap, I mean, it's wrong. I mean, it's completely wrong. How will I vote on it? I don't exactly know what it says, and I've learned don't commit if you don't know exactly what it says. I definitely, when you get something like that from the citizens, how can you not really take a look at it and go, even if I don't agree with it, this is what the people are saying. Mm-hmm. I think term limits are like that. People hate them or people love them, but when that many, I think you have to have like 60,000 signatures, or do you know how many signatures it is?
I think they're going for 56,000, and there are some other criteria. So many, 18 voting districts have to have 6% of the registered voters.
18 legislative districts have to get 6% of their population. It's a pretty good mark. If they get it on the ballot,
it's a big deal to get it on the ballot. Yeah, because I think once that term limits, they upped the ante and made it harder to get a ballot.
They did do that. They made it harder to get things on the for citizens to execute an initiative. Okay, let's move on to the next topic here. Public lands. You already kind of mentioned this, but we have a couple questions here. You know, there is actually an active movement within Idaho promoting the transfer of federal lands to the state. You mentioned that you'd like to see the state managing federal lands. Would you favor or oppose the effort to just transfer federal lands to the state?
Or
what's your idea there with dealing with the public lands?
We're having this conversation a lot in Boise. Things are trending this way. I've even heard, it's not a matter of do we want them, it's when we get them. I don't know if that's the case. You just kind of hear the chitter chatter, but right now I don't know that we could handle a big dump of all the federal lands. And so I think what the state is doing, is slowly starting to take over management of these lands. Quite frankly, if the lands are open and the people can use them and they're managed properly, I don't think we'd even be having this conversation. But it is true that the federal government is not managing our lands properly. And some of that is because the environmentalist will continually sue them when they try to log the properties. It's called equal access to justice, and they basically can sue to stop a sale of timber. And when they do that, they're going to get paid regardless. The way the law's written, they get paid whether they win or whether they lose. And so this is a problem, and has stopped the management of the lands. And we cannot afford fires up here.
I don't understand. Who's getting paid? You say they're getting paid whether they win or lose?
The environmentalists will hire lawyers. Excuse me, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
The lawyers will get paid mm-hmm. whether they win or lose when they pursue that mm-hmm. issue. And mm-hmm. that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, follow-up question on the public lands question. This is very local to us. The Bonner County Commissioners have placed a ballot on the question for all voters on May 15th, asking whether they favor or oppose the Scotchman Peaks Wilderness, the proposed wilderness. What's your position?
So I am against the Scotchman's Peak Wilderness being tied up into a wilderness, because we're treating it like a wilderness as it is, pretty much. We are protecting it. It's very dear to Sandpoint and North Idaho's hearts. I think we will do a better job managing it than the feds. So I think it's something we can do locally, and we don't need the federal government to lock it up and put some of these wilderness areas. There are tons and tons of restrictions, like the amount of people that can go on it at one time. You know, if you have a class of 20 kids that wants to go take a hike up Scotchman's Peak, that's not going to be allowed when it is federally designated as a wilderness. So while I disagree with designating it as a federal wilderness, I have no problem with local folks. I mean, we treat it like a wilderness already. I don't understand why we want the feds involved in this. Anytime we have federal government managing from Washington, D.C., I don't think they can do as good a job as local citizens from Sandpoint, Hope, Clark Fork. They know their land. They're going to protect it more than anyone from Washington, D.C. So,
I'll bring up a point that I've seen made, and that is that it already is federal land. It's Forest Service land. So it's not really changing who owns it. It's just changing how it's going to be managed.
But we don't know if it would be traded for anything, for state land. We don't know what the future holds, and to lock it up in perpetuity as a federal designated wilderness. I mean, I don't know. We love our area here, but to be managed from Washington, D.C., I don't agree with that. I think we know what's best for our backyard. And I think you see that with the smelter coming in, which I think we might get to, and with the mines coming in. We know what we want because we live here. And I think we will be able to protect it best.
Well, let's jump right to that question on the smelter. So there's a silicon smelter that's proposed for Newport, Washington, right across the border from Idaho. And a lot of local folks are very concerned about that, specifically the potential for pollution since we're upstream but downwind of the smelter. They're concerned about the potential for pollution and other impacts, actually, like traffic. What is your position on the smelter?
I have been against the smelter from day one. Last December, I think there was a big meeting. Over 500 citizens came.
In Newport.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The company came down. They didn't have any good answers. They are trying to sneak this through a SEPA process, which is a State Environmental Protection Act, instead of a NEPA. A NEPA process is a national process that would allow Idaho to be involved, and they're trying to fast track it, is what I see. I'm completely against it and how they're doing it. We do not have a seat at the table. I actually helped. Find a lawyer for some of the citizens over there that are working against it. They're super organized. People in Sandpoint will feel the effects of this because the truck traffic and the train traffic, it's going to be a lot. And so anyway, I could go on for an hour on just this topic. Idaho needs a seat at the table. Washington bureaucrats, they keep saying, Washington Department of Environmental Quality will take care of it. Those bureaucrats do not work for Idaho citizens. And once we start going down that permitting process, they're not going to look at anything else. They're not going to look at property values. They're not going to look at truck traffic. They're going to just fill out the permits and move forward. So
I have one question. You mentioned SEPA right now, and it would be better, it sounds like, if it was regulated by NEPA. Is there anything Idaho can do to make sure that happens?
Yes. So I have been talking with the agencies down in Boise. We need the executive branch to get involved. We're kind of at a weird spot because we're getting a new executive, we're going to get a new governor. And so the governor's candidates are aware, but as soon as one of them gets elected in May, that's the first stop right there. We need to educate them to exactly what's going on. We need to demand that we have a seat at the table. We need to put pressure on from the executive department, I truly believe. I've been trying to do it from a legislative. There's not a lot I can do from the legislative. The best is the people. The citizens are making a huge impact. They are doing records requests. They're following the money. These are critical things to find out exactly what's going on. And there's so much to this one. Oh, it's so wrong what they're doing over there.
Okay. Next one. Okay. Sorry, we're trying to move along different topics. A big chunk of your district includes Lake Ponderay, and one issue of concern that stretches back actually more than 20 years is the proposed Rock Creek Mine, which would be actually sited in Montana, but it's right alongside the Clark Fork River and just upstream from the lake. So there are concerns about potential pollution from the mine. Do you have a position on the Rock Creek Mine?
I honestly do not know a lot about it. I will say, in a general sense, North Idaho, Bonner, and Boundary County, we need to start organizing and getting some property rights groups that are literally, like this group, back to the smelter, they're organized, they have a lawyer. We need to do the same for some of these other issues that we're dealing with the growth in our area, if we want it, if we don't want it. I don't know a lot on the Rock Creek Mine. I haven't followed it. I haven't got a lot of calls from citizens about it. So I don't know the status of it. So I apologize.
Okay.
You'll probably hear about it eventually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I do know that there's a walleye issue in Lake Coeur d'Alene, though.
And Lake,
I don't, and Lake Ponderay.
Lake Ponderay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Lake Ponderay.
Yeah, that's a matter of debate, too. It's not
on our list. Well, it might be a world class.
You're a biologist, you know. The walleye is an introduced species, and there's concerns that it'll compete with some of the indigenous species.
Yes, yeah. But it will be good fishing for a while.
So okay. We're going to move on to a question from a listener that sent us this. Her name is Jean. Many states, including Oregon and Washington, have established or started a climate change adaptation plans to cope with the effects that we're already seeing, such as impacts on forest health, increased wildfires, stressed cold water fisheries, agricultural impacts, even potential effects on recreational providers like ski resorts. Of course, we have 35 feet of snow up there right now. But Idaho has not yet written a climate adaptation plan. Do you feel that Idaho should be preparing a plan? And do you see yourself helping move that process forward?
So, no, I do not see myself moving that process forward with a, what's it called, a climate
Adaptation plan.
So
looking ahead to potential effects of climate change
environment. This came from a listener that sent it in, but I think her point was, who cares where the change is coming from? Should we be preparing for, you know, hotter, drier summers?
Oh, well, I think we should always be preparing for any type of climate issues. But I think that the scientists do disagree on this topic. It's not a consensus. And the only people that seem to be jumping on this climate change bandwagon seems to be the politicians and people that are making money from it. So I hesitate to make plans called climate, what's it called? Climate?
Well, adaptation.
Adaptation. But do I think we need to have plans in place for safety, for forest fires, for flooding? Absolutely. Under the guise of climate change, I don't like it when politicians use words for agendas. And I see there's a lot of ways to do that with that language. So that's probably the best answer I could give.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Another topic. Actually, you've already touched on this, but there's a big national conversation going on right now about gun control. And one of the specific questions is, you know, how should we provide security in our schools? Should we have guns in schools? Should teachers be armed? What is your position on this?
So we hear a lot that guns aren't the problem. It's the people with the guns that are the problem. And I agree with that statement. So I'm going to touch on just a couple bills that we passed this year, even before this school shooting, this horrific school shooting. I was a co-sponsor of a bill. I don't have the number in front of me. But it's for gun safety, teaching kids in secondary and primary school gun safety and gun training. And so this is a first step. We've set up the structure. We've set it up so it's allowed in the schools. And so this is education is what it comes down to. Kids can't be afraid of a gun when they see it. They can't be afraid if somebody has a gun. They need to know how to react. They need to know what to do. And so if they're familiar with it, it's going to be a lot easier than if they're not. So this is a great opportunity for citizens in our district that do believe that the kids need to be educated on this to go to their school boards and say, hey, we want this elective course in our schools now, because the state has set this up. They've set it up where they can do their own training. I know there's a ton of retired law enforcement officers who would love the opportunity to get in front of students and give them some good education on this topic. So that's one issue. In Idaho, we are allowed to arm our teachers. We are allowed to arm our staff in our school. That decision comes down to your local school boards. So if your school, if you as a citizen think this should be done, then you go to your local school board and you talk to them about it. So the state has kind of done, I'd say, about all it can do. It allows schools to act locally, to make decisions locally. It's not putting any burden. It's setting up options for training for the kids. I think it's up to us as adults and as you know, as a society, to say, where do we want to go with this issue? There are the extremists that say we need to get the guns out of the hands of every single person. We know that doesn't work well in socialist countries. I just shared this story the other night, but I have a friend from Mexico and from a really rural area, and he said the police came in and de-armed everyone, and within two to three weeks, the cartel had moved in and basically taken over the town. And so I don't believe we need to get rid of guns. We need to educate people on guns. Guns in the schools, I have no problem with them, but that's up to the local school board to set up what that looks like in each individual school.
Just a little clarification. Yes. As far as gun control, do you think it would be a smart thing to have, and this has nothing to do with the Second Amendment.
Okay.
I don't think anybody wants to take guns away from people.
Okay.
But stricter gun regulation, such as purchasing and background checks, that's the word I was trying to think of. Would that be, I'm not aware of what Idaho currently has, but would that be a good thing to look at in the bigger picture of trying to make this more sane and sensible?
So I don't think so. I don't believe in more background checks, because who's going to do the background checking? The government, right? And what are the guns for? Why are we an armed society? So the Constitution is pretty clear.
Well, what about mentally ill individuals?
For an oppressive government.
Yeah, what about mentally ill individuals? So should they have unrestricted access to guns?
So there's so many levels of mentally ill. Who defines mentally ill? I think you've got a lot of issues there. It comes down, I don't believe in background checks. So okay. I just don't. Because who's the ones doing those background checks? It's the oppressive government. That's what we have our guns for. That's what the Constitution is clear that we have our guns for.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. We might disagree on that, but
thank you for answering that.
Yeah, and we're just about to run out of time.
Okay.
We've got probably time for another question, and then give you a minute or two to wrap things up. One thing that locals are looking at right now is the potential. In fact, it's probably pretty far along for a second train bridge to be built across Lake Pondere. It's not. I think some locals have been moving to slow it down with an environmental impact statement. But do you have a position on the building of another railroad bridge across Lake Pondere?
So I think it's probably a good idea, because it's going to help with congestion with traffic, which seems to be the biggest complaint I hear, is people are sitting waiting for a train to get by. Some of them for very long times. And if you do, they're not only supposed to, 15 minute max is the most you're supposed to wait. So if you are waiting more than that, call me, because I have a connection with the railroad lobby guys, and they take care of these issues. So, but back to the thing. So yeah, I think a second bridge is, I mean, I know they're going through the permitting process right now. I actually have seen that permit. They've got I think that's going through NEPA, so it's extensive. It's like a 250-page permitting, and I think it's probably a good thing to clear up traffic if they can do it safe and in a clean way. And I think that they're not going to get the permits if they can't prove that they can do that. I do think there is public meetings on this next Wednesday. So next Wednesday, there's public meeting in the morning and public meeting on night for comments. So if anyone is interested in that, it's in here. It's Pondere Event Center or Sand Point, somewhere in town here.
Okay.
So,
well, Representative Heather Scott, thank you so much for coming in. We're pretty much out of time. We'd like to give you 3 to 5 minutes or whatever you want to take to kind of wrap it up and tell us once again why you're running and whatever you want to say. And once again, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. So I guess why should you elect me or re-elect me in May? I guess the first reason is I have a proven track record. I have been fighting for the common man and woman who just want answers in government and not the runaround. And so that's what I've been doing, is exposing the system, showing people what's going on down there. I've been being your voice down in the Capitol. One thing I've set up for citizens is a website, growingfreedomforidaho.com. And it's set up for all citizens. Sometimes people think, well, we don't agree on something, so, you know, I don't like her. But this is set up for every citizen, and you can go look at all the bills. There's like 355 bills that got passed this year, but there was over 600 that were introduced. So all those bills are online. We have a bill reading team that basically tells what that bill, and those are people from around the states that are kind of experts in fields, and they tell you what that bill is actually going to do to the people. So I do care about the people, and I do care about getting your voice heard down there. I've been working with other legislators that are like-minded, that believe in smaller government and limited taxes. And so for the past 4 years, I've been rated as the number one legislator for voting for smaller government and on constitutional principles out of all 105 legislators. I do have a proven track record. And I always say, you know, follow the money. If you, for any of these candidates you're looking at, go to IdahoSecretaryofState.com and look who's funding them. And if you see a bunch of PAC money and lobbyists from Boise, you might wonder, you might want to think, what are their decisions going to be based on? And if you go to IdahoSecretaryofState.com and you look at mine, it is from your friends and neighbors in the community in our district. Most all of my money comes, unless I get some relatives out of state, but most of it comes from people in this district, not the lobbyists. And lobbyists will try to control you down there. They want you to vote for their interest. And I am not a special interest person. And that's why I get attacked so bad during election season, because I vote for the people. I don't care about the lobbyists. So anyway, I encourage people to get out to vote. The smelter is a huge issue. It is a huge issue that some people are just showing up to vote because of that issue. I'll just remind you, I am against the smelter. It will change our way of life up here with the truck traffic and the train traffic. And I have been working with the folks to push back on this from all different angles, with the bureaucrats, with the executive branch, and with the local citizens groups. So I encourage people to vote. Thank you, radio station, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Heather.
Thanks.
Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Heather.